home of Notre Dame football. 96.1 WSBT, South Bend, the sports leader. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is dribble.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Bumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Isn't this the way it always goes?
How does it go?
You're going on the air and the food shows up and then you're smelling it and staring at it.
So you need me to go on a little monologue?
Yeah,
here?
Just talk for a little bit, Evan. My burger and salad just arrived. It is very tasty
sans
looking.
The bun today, I see.
Yes, that's right. That's okay. Right. No bread. But I will indulge and go with a little beer later on. We, of course, are at Studebaker Brewing Company, second floor of Tippecanoe Place Restaurant, 620 West Washington Street in South Bend. Stop on by. We've got some giveaways today. We're going to be giving away T-shirts, growlers, pint glasses. They also have pints for $4 here today. So 8 different beers on tap, and we'll run through that list. But, of course, it is Leprechaun Lunch presented by Bud Light Seltzer. So we have to tell you about Bud Light Seltzer. Light and refreshing with 4 fruit flavors, just 100 calories, 2 grams of carbs, and less than a gram of sugar as well. It is Bud Light Seltzer. I had some.
You did?
For my Super Bowl party.
Ooh.
Last week.
All
yeah.
Right.
That's right. Mango, strawberry, lemon lime, black cherry, all very tasty.
What was your favorite one?
I think the mango was my favorite. And I was surprised. My wife, when I cracked it open, my wife, I'm like, do you want to try some of this mango? And she said, I don't like mango. And I said, since when do you not like mango? I didn't even realize this. But she enjoyed the strawberry quite a bit. And I would say the strawberry was actually my second favorite. All and right. I'm not usually a big strawberry fan. So go figure.
It might have to be in the golf cart this summer.
I think you're
doing some R&D, huh?
That's exactly right. All right. So we've got a lot going on, of course. And thanks to Kevin and his staff here at Studebaker Brewing Company for having us out today. We've got a great spot. And we're sitting right here by the window and great atmosphere, of course, inside Tippecanoe Place as well as Studebaker Brewing Company. I didn't realize they had escape rooms here. Have you ever done escape rooms before?
I have not
done one either.
No.
But they have a couple of escape rooms here. So one of the many things.
So that's next. We're going to do a Sean and Sharpley escape.
We might have to.
Yeah.
We can bring some salespeople with us and see who makes it out, I guess. Christian, our sales guy, is not making eye contact right now. All right. So let's get into it. We've got a lot of different football I wanted to talk about today. Speaking of Super Bowl party, what did you do for the Super Bowl last week?
Well, I ate some pizza, which I think is probably par for the course.
All right.
And watched it with my daughter before I had to put her to sleep for, you know, it was her bedtime around 7.
Lucy, is she 3 yet?
She's not 3. She'll be 3 in June.
Creeping towards 3.
Yeah, but she was, I asked her who she was rooting for, you know, as a 2.5-year-old. I said Chiefs or 49ers. So she went with the Chiefs.
Okay.
So she picked the winner.
All right.
So right now she's 1-for-1 in Super Bowl picks.
Good call. She nailed that one.
She kept asking to watch the football, Super Bowl, you know, so we did, and we watched it.
That's
but of course, you know, being the good dad I was, I made sure to kind of make sure the commercials for her were appropriate.
Were appropriate. And that's, you never know. So I thought the commercials were fairly tame.
Yeah, they were.
I did find out that, you know, speaking of Lucy making the picks, I probably need to think about doing some futures picks because the last 2 years, Darren Pritchett and I in July have made our early Super Bowl predictions, and I've picked 3 of the last 4. You know, the last 2 of the 4 teams who have played in the last 2 Super Bowls, I picked 3 of 4 in the month of July. So I'm feeling pretty good, and I'm thinking I'll go, you know, find my Betfair app next July and see. You know, the one that I missed, of course, I picked the Cowboys to play the Chiefs this year. So that was a big whiff, and it's the first time that I have ever gone down that path, you know, picking my team. I bought into all the hype. I did all that stuff. But, of course, they fired their coach, so we'll see what happens next year. There'll probably be way too much hype.
We have to wait till July, though.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Wait till July, and we did it exactly 7 months out, whatever the date was. Wasn't the Super Bowl? You know, we did it. So we did it right around 4th of July weekend.
Okay.
Exactly 7 months before the Super Bowl. But I picked three of the last four.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, 75%. If you can pick 75% when you're dropping wagers, you're going to be making a lot of money. But, of course,
Might have a little side hustle going on here.
Of course, if I do it with money on the line, that's when things will probably turn disastrous.
Yeah, probably start to overthink it.
That's right.
Just got to go with the gut.
That's right. That's exactly right. So, any thoughts on the game?
Chiefs comeback? You tell me what to bet, and I'll put the money down.
There you go. I'll feed you the info.
There we go.
For whatever that's worth, I'll feed you the info. Were you surprised at all the way the game played out?
Oh, it was a good football game.
Yeah.
I think kind of my three big takeaways, Mahomes is a really good quarterback, and he really didn't play
that well.
First
and foremost, yeah.
Right? Okay. But he was what they needed when they needed it, especially late in the fourth quarter. Certainly the big play was the long pass down the field on a play he said that they ran the year prior against the Patriots, too, for a big gainer. The second part of this, you know, there was the story following the game outside of the Chiefs winning and Andy Reid kind of getting that, you know, monkey off his back and searching for it after 21 years as a head coach was the Niners blowing a double-digit lead.
Yeah.
Let's be clear. It was 10 points. It wasn't three touchdowns.
That's
so
true, too.
So it was double digits.
It was double digits.
We're also 1 point
wasn't
away.
Wasn't insurmountable by
we're
any means.
We're also 1 point away from saying it was a single-digit lead. It was 9 points. So I think that was fairly overplayed. Now, it's going to chase Shanahan because it's now the second time where in the fourth quarter when they had opportunities to put teams away, they weren't able to. But there's also a defense playing there, too, that did give up points.
Yeah. And the Chiefs defense, I think you have to give them
really
credit,
well.
Too, for stepping up in the fourth quarter.
They came up and made some good stops. I think if you're looking maybe at a singular moment, and certainly football is not it's a game of singular moments in one broad, it's going to be the long pass that Garoppolo missed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he probably was having dreams and maybe still having dreams on that because that might have been, you know, the game winner. You can't miss a guy that open.
No, and I mean, I thought the 2 points where the game was over for San Francisco was when Mahomes throws the second interception, bad interception, they're in field goal range, it's third down. If they have that ball, you know, they probably at least kick a field goal, and then when that ball was in the air, seeing that ball from Garoppolo in the air, it looked like, okay, here it is, game over.
I thought it was there, too.
Yeah, and then it's overthrown, and everything goes back the other way. But again, you've got to give Mahomes credit for even though he did not have a good three quarters and part of the fourth quarter either, he kept playing and he finally hit those two long shots, and they had not hit anything. Everything was under all night long, and then they finally hit him, and boom, there you go.
And you know, they were looking for that, and you have to give a lot of credit to the 49ers with their game plan. They executed it for three quarters, really, or three plus. And I guess poor Richard Sherman, you know, for all the talk that he had going into the game to then get torched in a couple of key situations. You know, they finally, and watching and listening to the game, you know, it was repeated over and over, really in the second half. You know, here are some one-on-one matchups. You're kind of waiting for the Chiefs to maybe start to take some shots versus maybe some clean one-on-one wins. You know, there's a reason why the 49ers were there. They have a good defense. They have guys that can cover in space. And even when they do play some zone two, you know, it's tough to get behind teams that do that. And you kept hearing it and hearing it and hearing it. And finally, I think, you know, Mahomes let a few fly.
Well, that's the thing, because Troy Aikman, over the course of the broadcast, every once in a while, he'd go, look here at the bottom of the screen. You've got one-on-one. But then Mahomes wouldn't even look that direction.
And so I think they finally needed to, and I don't know if they necessarily did, you know, take a quote-unquote shot and maybe a 50-50 ball. There finally were some clear wins.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think 49ers fans likely were probably holding their collective breath, and especially, you know, how the playoffs have gone so far for the Chiefs, you know, trailing in three games, coming back in three games, and really an explosion of points.
Seriously.
In the second half, you know, to win those football games. And that's why this one, you know, even if you look at the clock with 10 minutes, 8 minutes, and Troy Aikman said that too, you know, this there's a lot of football still to be played.
Absolutely.
Because with a three and out and a stop from the Chiefs defense and, you know, one offensive possession with, you know, five or six plays, one being an explosive play, you've now got a three-point football game and the entire complexion is different.
Well, because even when the Chiefs got the ball back after the 49ers last real possession, when they turned it over on downs and then the Chiefs have the lead, I wasn't even secure in the fact that the Chiefs could seal it off because they're not a running team. The 49ers had all three timeouts, and then boom, to finish it off with the Damian Williams 38-yard touchdown run. Just
and those retro Jordan cleats.
Yeah, that's right. I did. Those were pretty sharp. Well, a few of the Chiefs had those on.
At one point, yeah, the shoe fell off. And we got a good look at it.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Any commercials that stood out to you?
Well, first off, I think we probably got to talk about the Tom Brady. You know, the cryptic.
That's right, because we talked about that last week.
The cryptic post.
We were all wondering what's going to happen now.
Yeah, there was the cryptic post on Instagram on if he was walking in or out of the stadium at Gillette, and then it ends up being a Hulu commercial.
Turned out to be he was just walking into a bank vault supplied by Hulu.
And so, you know, leave it to Tom to troll everybody.
Yep.
On Super Bowl Sunday. And then certainly, you know, following the game and in the wake of that, you know, him then saying, you know, he's not going anywhere, number one. And two, he's not going to be in a blazer next year.
Yeah.
It was his comment.
Exactly.
I don't know. For me, probably the Bryan Cranston Mountain Dew commercial.
Okay.
It was
kind
of a remake of The Shining.
Yeah.
But I'm a big Bryan Cranston fan. I actually just restarted Breaking Bad.
So did I.
They've
got
the last
a marathon on AMC right now.
I'm watching it right now on one of the streaming services. And one of my all-time favorite shows, The Office, is right there. The Office is obviously a little bit easier to kind of put on and just it's there
right,
and you're watching.
Right.
You know, with Breaking Bad, you're kind of locked in and tuned in, or at least I am when I watch it.
Are you a Better Call Saul fan, too?
I am,
okay,
too.
Good.
Yeah, I am a Better Call Saul fan. So season 4 is about to pop on Netflix.
It is.
Season
4, yeah, season 5.
Already played, right, correct.
Season 5 is 16 days away.
Well,
not that I'm counting down or anything.
Well, I can binge then season 4 on Netflix because it's about to drop on there from the prior season, so I'll be all caught up on that. But so I obviously like Bryan Cranston. I thought that was a good commercial. That was probably the one that stuck. You know, stood out to me the most, I guess.
I like the Hyundai Park the car when the Smart Park, all the Boston guys, John Krasinski from The Office, Rachel Dratch, the former Saturday Night Liver, and then Big Poppy was up in the upstairs window. I thought that was a pretty good one. What did you think of the Charlie, I can't think of Charlie's last name, the Tide commercial, kind of the running gag throughout the Super Bowl?
That was good, too.
I thought that was pretty good.
I liked that one, too. From It's Always Sunny?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was interacting with the Bud Light Night guy and all that different stuff.
Yeah.
I thought that was
a good one.
Pretty good. Was Lucy in bed before the halftime show?
Yes. Yeah.
Were you glad that she was? Did you buy? Are you?
I thought it was a great show.
Yeah.
I mean, they put on a.
It was entertaining enough.
It was very
thought.
Entertaining. You know, I don't know. There's been a lot of backlash, I suppose, but there's also been some positive stuff as well. I mean, it was. What do you expect?
I think that poll gets a bad rap. You know.
I guess so. I mean,
everyone's hung up on calling it a stripper poll. It's not like they're actually stripping on the pole.
No,
you know?
they certainly were not. So
that's right.
I don't know. I messaged you though as soon as J-Lo came on because
that's
we were
predicting the songs. That's right. So I'm nailing that
block.
One too. Jenny from the Block. She came out with Jenny.
Yeah.
So I'm three of my last four on the Super Bowl teams being in the Super Bowl, and I nailed the J-Lo
right
Jenny
there,
from the Block.
Man.
I think I
We're
definitely need to start dropping something. That's for sure.
They legalized all this betting in Indiana now, so now we can take advantage of it, huh?
That is exactly right. That is exactly
we'll
right.
We'll just have one segment devoted to that from now on.
I think we probably
we
should.
Might have to.
I know. All right. Well, let's turn towards some Notre Dame football. We're inching closer to the start of spring football practice.
Already?
Yep. That's going to be coming up, and I think we're going to be finding out in the near future exactly what the schedule is going to look like. The last few years, they have taken, they've practiced like a week or so before spring break, then they took a week off, and then they came back after spring break and got back at it. And of course, the Blue Gold game will be heard right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader in April. But with Ian Book deciding to return for his fifth year, this is something we haven't had the chance to talk about yet because we took a break for a few weeks. Phil Jurkovec transferred to Boston College during the winter break. So let's start with Jurkovec first. You were in a similar situation when, you know, behind some guys and all that kind of stuff when you were at Notre Dame. Did you, was transferring ever on your radar, Evan Sharpley?
Yes. Yeah, was it? Was. Yeah.
How close do you think you came?
Really close. And, you know, I think, you know, hindsight is 20/20. And if I wanted to play, I probably should have left.
Right.
And it was kind of pre-transfer portal, and how you went about trying to gauge interest from other schools was really difficult.
I bet.
And you didn't want to tiptoe or go over any lines with the NCAA, and also too, you know, you didn't want to upset the current staff if you ended up staying.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, I had following my junior season, where we had a poor year. I had a few starts, and at the end of the year, when Charlie Wace made the decision, you know, moving forward, our starting quarterback is going to be Jimmy Clausen, and I didn't hear my name. You know, you start to look at, you know, what does that mean for me if I want to play? I had been on a track to graduate early, but I had then switched majors, which kind of put, at least in my mind, that was one hurdle I wasn't sure hoop I wanted to jump through, where I had put in 3+ years already in the classroom to get a degree at Notre Dame,
yeah,
and then leave and me not be able to do that. So that was part of it, but you know, I was to the point where Boston College was one of the schools I was looking at.
Was it?
Very closely. Delaware was another one, too, because I could have transferred in and played right away.
So how does that process work? Because, like you said, there wasn't a transfer portal. So did you have to kind of reach out and put out some feelers?
And I don't know if there wasn't really a structured way to do it. You would ask or have people ask, or, you know, a coach knows a coach, or your high school coach went and played with this guy, you know, you're certainly looking at the roster too. And because what you don't want to do is go and then you're in a situation where, again, you're not playing. And I think you're seeing that less and less now, where most of the grad transfer guys are grad transferring in situations where they probably have had discussions with that staff on, hey, if I'm coming in, there's got to be a, you know, a pretty good high percentage chance where I'm going to be the guy walking in the door. Now, whether or not those deals are made, you know, you're probably not going to publicly say they are, but it looks like most of the time that is the case. So, you know, I had told Coach Weiss, I had told my quarterback coach Ron Paulus that I'm done, I'm leaving. And I remember Coach Paulus, when I told him that, he left the Goog at the time and walked across campus to my dorm to talk to me in person. And that meant a lot.
So did you call him and tell him
did
you text him?
I called and told him that.
Okay.
And so we, you know, we continued to talk a little bit more. And then once I went and then spoke in person to Coach Weiss, decided that I was going to stay. You know, for me, it really was more than football. Did I want to play more? 100%. Was it guaranteed that I was going to have a career in football after college? No. Baseball also played into that as well, which, you know, a lot of athletes that are looking to transfer don't have maybe the luxury of saying, yeah, I could have some opportunities in another sport, too. I did. So that also was part of the discussion. But, you know, my parents, specifically my dad, did his due diligence in researching a lot of different schools.
Sure.
The rules within the NCAA then and the precedence on grad transfers being immediately eligible. then it was, there was a larger focus on you had to find a school that had a master's program that your
current school didn't offer. Yeah.
So for me, there were a few that I was looking at in education because Notre Dame doesn't even have an education program. I got my education certificate or degree from St. Mary's.
Okay.
So I was taking classes there as part of the co-exchange, but my teaching certificate is actually from St. Mary's, not Notre Dame. And with Notre Dame not offering that as a master's, there were schools then that I could earmark or look at and say, I'm going to get my master's in education and then be immediately eligible because that's what the precedent said at the time.
Okay. So they obviously didn't have any hard feelings toward you, at least thinking about
I don't know if there are hard feelings maybe prior to too. So I don't know if it necessarily changed, you know.
But they accepted you. They sort of talked you into staying, it sounds like.
And I would say they being Coach Paulus.
Okay.
I would say they being Coach Paulus. You know, I provided at least from
they air quotes
from a experience standpoint. You know, I was a guy then that would have been there, and I ended up coming back for my fifth year too. Provided depth at a position, had started a few games. So I think that was something that they liked in the interim between what would then be, moving from Clawson to Crist.
Yeah.
Where they had a guy that they knew they could use if they needed.
Right.
So it was, they did. But I think, more than anything, then my realization was this does go beyond athletics. And for that, I think I made a good decision. it's continued to open up doors since the day I walked out. Now,
the 4 for 40 philosophy, yes, that kind of thing.
Although it is kind of funny now, is I've tried to get jobs at Notre Dame twice. It seems to be the only place. It seems to be the only place I can't get a job is Notre Dame. Anywhere else, don't even have to show my resume. They already know I went there.
Right.
But if I go to Notre Dame, then I'm 0-2 right now.
Yeah. See how that works out.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did you think? Virginia Tech head coach Justin Puente this week on the February signing day the other day said that any of his players who enter their name in the NCAA transfer portal will not be allowed to return to play for the Hokies. What do you think when you hear that?
I mean, I get it. You want kids that are bought into your program, not somebody that's sitting on the fence and maybe shopping around. But from the player's perspective, I mean, you don't know from year to year sometimes if your coach is going to be there. So they have the luxury now to maybe go through that process, because it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to leave. But it does send a pretty clear message both to your teammates and your coaches. Hey, if I have a better opportunity, I might be out of here. So it's something that, with the transfer portal and it being a little more public now on who is shopping around, you kind of where your teammates and your players stand better than maybe the process I went through, where, there could have been a half a dozen or more players going through what I did, but nobody really knew.
Yeah.
Well, unless we told each other.
Yeah, and this makes it more public now.
Correct.
Obviously.
Yes.
But don't you think that this also, because I think that there were 12 Virginia Tech players who entered their name in the portal. And last year they had two different players. The guy who, Hendon Hooker, who ended up being their quarterback, and then their leading rusher, had both entered the portal but decided to stay, and that worked out very well for Virginia Tech. And now they've got 12 in there, which seems like a big number.
Sounds like a big number.
Yeah, but it also...
Well, it's a big number now when your head coach is saying, well, you guys can't be on the team anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems like it will probably kind of make some guys kind of steer the other direction, because they don't know what the outcome of this is going to be. And I just think that when you look at the fact that Fuente specifically, one, they took in a transfer running back from Rutgers this offseason, so he has no trouble. He has no problems taking somebody else's transfer, and he also interviewed for the Baylor head
Isn't
coaching
that a funny
job
one right there? Yeah.
And he decided to stay. So he essentially entered the head coaching form of the transfer portal, but pulled his name back out, and you know whether or not they were going to make him an offer or not. So he has no problem dipping his toe there, but he doesn't want his players doing the same thing.
It's such a rocky road across the board.
Yeah.
You know, it's been the age-old conversation on accountability from the coaches, too, where, you know, if they get a better offer a year or two into their contract, they could leave and be gone. You know, so I don't know. You know, you hear all the time.
I understand both sides, but
and I don't know if there's a right way to go about it.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I think that the NCAA with the transfer portal is trying to create a little more transparency with this, but it does present some other issues as we're seeing here. On what a coach could deem as, you know, impermissible.
Yeah.
We want you bought in. But, coach, you just went interviewed, too, or you're
right.
Bringing in other kids. So it seems like it's kind of a vicious circle. And I don't know if there's ever going to be unless the NCAA starts paying players and you can just trade.
All the cans of worms get opened up.
You can trade.
Here's the trade-off. Yes.
No, we'll trade this player for your player. We'll trade this coach here for these two players. You still have four more years of eligibility.
Right.
Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, man.
So,
could you imagine if that happened?
I don't know. There's a lot of gray area. There's not a lot of black and white within transfers and coaching changes.
Right.
It just seems to be, you know, if you correct one side of it or try to create something that does, it probably will open up another issue within the university or the program.
Well, it's just like you talk about the paying, and they've been talking about this likeness where Evan Sharpley playing for Notre Dame could go out and do a sponsorship with a car dealership or get some kind of local endorsement or whatever. But the can of worms that opens up is how you keep coaches where endorsements at whatever school might be bigger than another school. So if Oklahoma can give a kid
right.
or promise a kid a $50,000 endorsement, whereas Oklahoma State maybe is $10,000 or $15,000, there's a big advantage
going?
There.
Where are you going?
Yeah, exactly. In addition to whatever comes with the success of the football program and everything else. Oh, we just had our first flight of delicious-looking Studebaker Brewing Company beer dropped off. So we will be doing some sampling coming up here in a little bit. And we've got some more Notre Dame football and also this one-time transfer rule kind of on this subject. We're going to get to that.
I can dig it, by the way.
Okay.
We'll get to it.
All right.
Though.
So there's Evan's tease. He can dig the one-time transfer rule. So we'll talk about that, plus Phil Jurkovec, Brendan Clark, and more about Brendan Clark and the current quarterback situation at Notre Dame. Drew Pine being here on campus this spring. We'll do all that when we continue. We've got some XFL stuff that we're going to get to in a little bit as well. That's kicking off this weekend.
What were our XFL names? We're going to have to dig those up.
Oh,
we did that.
Oh, man. That's right.
We had some good ones.
I just thought about that the other day.
Yeah, we had some good ones.
Yeah, we did. Okay, so we're going to be doing all that when we return. We are at Studebaker Brewing Company on the second floor of Tippecanoe Place Restaurant. Stop on by. The menu includes soups, salads, appetizers, burgers, jumbo baked potatoes, flatbread, sandwiches, and entrees. Sweet pulled pork fries. I'm surprised I don't see that on your plate over there. You can get a Studebaker Angus hamburger, which both of us have, prime rib sandwich, pulled pork mac and cheese, Bayou shrimp pasta. Is your mouth watering yet?
Yeah, I'm about to eat this
Mine
burger.
Is because I've been looking at my food for half an hour now. So we will take a timeout. We'll partake during the break, and then we'll come back with more football talk. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Next one, WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch. As we continue from Studebaker Brewing Company, second floor of Tippecanoe Place Restaurant, thanks to Kevin, Jasmine, and Melissa for helping us out here today. We were still eating when we came back.
Piper Pizza.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right. I had forgotten about it. And Christian, our sales rep from the station, he was sitting here and we were talking about it. And... That's what it was. Your When you had the thing, what's your XFL name? And it was like your favorite wrestler and whatever your favorite food or something like that.
Maybe your last meal.
Yeah, your last meal. And I said Roddy Piper pizza was mine.
It's a good one.
It kind of rolls off the tongue. Do you remember yours?
Well, I went back and checked our show notes. I had Sting ribeye down. But Sting I don't ribeye. Know if that's what I went with. I might have kept going. There might have been another one.
That's right.
I don't know.
That's right. So we've got the XFL kicking off this weekend. And do you want to talk about that first, or do you want to wait? Let's talk about this transfer.
Okay.
Yeah, the one-time transfer, because you said you were
brand new rule
in favor of it. And, I mean, maybe that proposal. things, you know, things would have been different for you. You were talking about
I probably
you
would
looked
have
into
the
transferring.
Trigger. Yeah.
Yeah, if you could go, you didn't have to sit out. And the Big Ten Conference athletic directors are supporting this one-time transfer exemption for all sports, which would allow college athletes to go from one D1 school to another without sitting out for a year. This is according to a report earlier late last week. The one-time transfer exemption is currently allowed in every sport with the exception of, now follow the money here,
okay.
Football, men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball, and ice hockey, mm-hmm. which are essentially the five most money-generating sports, I think, in most cases, in Division I sports. So every other sport you can transfer one time without sitting out. So you said you were in favor of it. Why do you think this would be a good thing?
Well, I mean, I think ultimately you're not going to have you're going to have kids now looking at, you know, where do I really want to go if maybe I got this wrong the first time. But, you know, if other sports are already doing it, it would make sense. But, you know, leave it to the NCAA. I think, you know, the NCAA to flip a coin on some of these issues is really what it's come down to on, excuse me, because right now there are some instances, even within the grad transfer rules, where one athlete is allowed a transfer and the other one is getting shut down for whatever reason.
Right.
So I think what this will do is it'll at least provide expectations and structure,
some consistency,
which has not really been the case with this entire subject of transfer.
Yeah.
Because you also have then, you know, within the transfer, outside of grad transfer, is hardship. You know, even some coaching changes that could result in you being allowed to then transfer or go to another school. So I think for this, you may eliminate some of those where now. You know, let's say your coach does get fired and, you know, you really want to play for him.
Yeah.
Well, you could now follow him to where he's going.
True.
But once again, as we said in the last segment, it could open up a whole other. I mean, what if you have then 30 guys who are like, you know what, that's the head coach I signed to play for. He's going now. You know, maybe
that's
he's
a big issue.
At a mid-major.
Yeah.
You could say like a P.J. Fleck. You know, he's at Western Michigan. He goes to Minnesota. Well, hey, and some of his players did follow him, but, you know, say, I would like to now use my one-time transfer, and I would like to go play there.
Well, that's a great point, because what happens if you do in one season have this mass exodus? Because when Charlie Weiss left Kansas, for example, your former Notre Dame coach, their scholarships were in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's for different reasons. It's not because a bunch of people, you know, he kicked some guys off, but he also brought in some JUCO guys who weren't academic qualifiers. A lot of different things happened that contributed to that. But I'm just saying, when you look at that as an example, it's several years later now, and you can only sign, what is it, X amount? It's like 20 players, I think, per cycle. You can't go over that limit. So because their numbers got so low, they are still trying to catch back up, because obviously every year you still have guys graduating. You'll probably have guys transfer. They're still trying to catch back up, so that's been a big part of their problem over the last 7 or 8 years, is trying to catch up. So if you have something like that where you've got this one-time deal and 20 guys decide, well, I'm out now, yeah. then it's going to take that school a long time to catch back up with those numbers again.
And that's why with anything we've talked about, whether it's paying players, transfer portal rules, it's all going to be about the language on how it actually is structured. I think the broad idea and concepts of both of them, paying athletes or using likeness, setting up maybe a one-time or even just the introduction of the transfer portal itself, I think, by and large, they're good ideas, but the execution and the verbiage and the language to set up the structure is what is going to be most important to try to curtail some of these loopholes or issues that could really either have schools benefit to an extreme or be crippled for several years.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, those are extreme cases, but it's going to have to be something that's looked at in this. Like, if you put a cap on it, like the first 10 players at a school.
Yeah, but wouldn't that stink that, you know, you're,
I know,
the 11th
you're number
guy,
11.
You're like, man,
yeah.
I got to stay here still.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, they're going to have to, I think, take some of those things into consideration.
But if it is, you know, a one time within your eligibility, okay, if they do cap it, well, if I miss out, I don't know, maybe then I'm putting my name in for next year, just so you guys know.
But, I mean, the bottom line is they have to find better consistency than what they have now. Because, like you said, it's a case-by-case thing. And for about 2 years, as Brian Kelly told us at one point, it's a matter of who your lawyer happens to be, it seemed like, whether or not you were able to play right away. Guys with the right lawyer were able to get in and play.
This is expedited for you, but we don't know for you yet.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so we started off talking about Phil Dracovic leaving for Notre Dame or leaving Notre Dame for Boston College. It leaves Notre Dame with a lot of inexperience behind Ian Book, with sophomore Brendan Clark and early enrollee Drew Pine on the roster this spring. So let's start with Clark, because he was here last year. You know, he got in a little bit of game action, threw a touchdown pass at one point, but what do you think Brendan Clark's top objectives this spring need to be to prepare himself to be the number two guy next fall?
Well, for me, it's going to come down to protections and progressions.
Okay.
If we're going to keep it really simple, you know, for him, he's probably going to get more reps, I would think, in the spring than Ian Book might even get. We're talking about finally a multi-year starter. And a guy who's done a lot of damage on the football field.
Yeah.
The spring is not going to be an overly important time for him. His time is going to be summer, end of summer into fall camp, to really dial up, you know, chemistry with his receivers and tight ends. But they do need a number two. Now, it wasn't like they were going to have a ton of experience even if Dracovic stayed.
Right.
You know, it's not like he had notched starts under his belt. Granted, he had played. But really, you've got two fresh faces.
Two very fresh faces, yeah.
But I think all three are very similar in skill set. They are all very accurate passers, can spin the football, good quick releases. We're not going to be talking about mechanical issues, I don't think, for any of them.
No, that's very true. When you look at the three of them.
These are all guys.
We'll find out with Drew Pine anyway.
That's true. But there was nothing glaring from me, at least, when I watched, you know, his high school tape that, you know, this is, we're going to be having those conversations on, do we need to fix his throwing motion? I don't think that. So from there, you know, it's going to be, how do they then work within this offensive system where it's going to be distributing the football? But again, protections and progressions. Know where you're picked up. Know where your hots, your sights are. So if you have a free blitzer, you know where the ball is going to be going. And then ultimately what your progression is. Get through those, okay? Get through those progressions. And then if you need to escape the pocket or move the pocket, use your athleticism to do those things. All three guys can do that.
Yeah, so then when you look at Pine, he is an early enrollee, and he is on campus. Is Lucy eating cereal right
Lucy
now?
Lucy is eating cereal right now.
Evan's got his FaceTime on, talking to Lucy while she's sitting at home. Is she at home or at Grandma
she's
and Grandpa's?
Right now,
okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, hello, Lucy. She can't see me, but. Okay, so how about Drew Pine, the incoming freshman? He's an early enrollee this spring. How big an advantage is that for him? And, you know, arriving now on campus and being able to go through the spring rather than over the summer with all the other freshmen.
I can't understate how or overstate. I can't overstate how important
this
it is.
Overstate.
That he's an early enrollee at the quarterback position. Well, really, at any position. It expedites everything, Sean. You know, if you're able to show up on campus, number one, you're going to get acclimated to the school. You can settle in academically. You know kind of what the expectations are. The most important thing from this, from a learning standpoint, is both in the classroom but then also on the football field, is there isn't a game every Saturday.
Yeah.
There isn't the pressure of, hey, coach, I really don't know what I'm doing out there. That's okay.
You don't have a giant microscope with 80,000 people watching you.
Exactly.
You figure it out.
You're not rushed into being prepared. There's that cycle is a little bit longer. And I think learning is usually done in that manner from the early enrollees. I think that they learn better because they don't feel that pressure. Man, I remember, and I came in the summer. I was part of the first class because we didn't have early enrollees at the time.
Yeah.
But I was part of the first class that enrolled in the summer session, which was new at Notre Dame at the time.
Wow.
And granted, we were a small signing class.
Yeah.
You know, it was at the tail end of Tyrone Willingham getting fired a month or two before signing day. So we had a few guys decommit. So we had a really small class, but we were all there in the summer. So even for me, for doing that was a positive experience. But then once we got into fall camp and you get this huge, thick playbook and you go through, you know, your 2 or 3 weeks of fall camp and then the season starts, coaches, they ain't waiting around for you to figure it out or get it.
Yeah, it's there.
If
it's not, right?
If you don't, you're going to spend some time on the scout team. You'll be down there, okay? But they were, and there were conversations like that multiple times on, listen, if you don't get it today, we're not waiting for you tomorrow. So you better stay up and try to figure it out. And if you can't, again, each day it's going to just kind of get worse for you trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's I have to think that like you said, Drew Pine coming in, because he's elevated now, if Phil Dracovic had stayed, he's the number four guy. But now, all of a sudden, he finds himself in a place where, depending on how things go this spring, like you said, there is no pressure, but who knows? Maybe he's competing for a spot as a number two guy going into next fall. But, you know, you've said before on this show that you've heard a lot of good things about Brendan Clark. I thought Brendan Clark looked pretty good in the flashes that we saw him in the situations that we saw him in. Granted, there weren't a whole lot, but I liked him at times during fall camp as a true freshman, and liked him in the couple opportunities that he got out on the field in some blowout situations.
Yeah, I mean, all the buzz that I heard last summer was all positive.
Yeah,
and that kind of led me to, you know, saying again. And I said this prior to him even me really hearing much about him, that I thought he was going to be the next in line as a starting quarterback. I just think, you know, his and again, we're going off of high school tape. We're going off of some of the glimpses that we've seen. But I'm also going off of some intel that I've heard internally on this guy's pretty good.
Okay. All right.
So. But you don't really know until you're out there and the lights are shining.
Very true. My intel tells me we will be sampling some craft beer coming up next at Studebaker Brewing Company. We each have our own flight, and we will be partaking in those when we return. And also XFL talk.
That's right. What
more could you want? Beer talk, XFL talk. That's coming up when we continue. Leprechaun Lunch presented by Bud Light Seltzer, and we are live today at Studebaker Brewing Company, 620 West Washington in South Bend, the second floor of Tippecanoe Restaurant. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, 90 WSBT, the sports leader. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, coming to you live from Studebaker Brewing Company and Tippecanoe Place Restaurant. And I've been informed that I've been saying it wrong.
Come on.
The whole time. We are actually on
the
third floor and not the second floor, because technically they consider the basement the first floor, and then the level that you walk in on is the second floor. And we are on the third floor, not the second floor.
We're in the brewery with
doesn't
the beer.
Matter what floor. Yeah, that's right. The brewery is right over there. You can see through the window as they brew some of the beer on the other side of the bar that we're sitting on. So we each have a flight of four different beers. And I think we actually have three of the four the same.
We do.
Don't you? So what do you want to start with?
You can pick.
All right. You want to start with the Starlight Stout?
Let's start with the Starlight Stout.
Let's do it.
Okay. What are the rules here?
Just taste and see how it goes.
Right.
We don't have to have too many rolls, right?
Well, okay, we have to talk a little bit about it. It's an oatmeal stout.
Okay.
And it has a little roastiness and lots of body. And we're sitting at about 5%.
Okay.
Low IBU. So
I would agree with that. Nice body, but What I like, what I don't like.
Roasty.
What I do, yeah, it is. You can get those roasted tones in there. What I don't like about stouts, not this one, but some stouts, is if you have too much hop in there. I don't want my stout to be really hoppy. And this is not hoppy. There's a lot of smoothness and richness to it. So I like that.
I like all oatmeal stouts.
Okay.
I don't think I've met one.
You'll
that
take
I don't
overly
like.
Hoppy oatmeal stouts and be
oh,
fine
of course.
With it.
Yeah.
Okay. So a nice smooth.
So we're one for one.
Roasty stout. We are. So now that takes us. You want to go to the Honeybee Ale?
The Honeybee Ale. Yes.
Tell us about the Honeybee Ale.
6.3% ABV. Also low IBU, so not too bitter. It's a Pilsner and honey malt base. And you've got some Kolsch yeast. And
okay.
It's naturally carbonated with raspberry wildflower honey from the Unity Gardens.
Pilsner and Kolsch kind of.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think that right there is going to be why you're going to have your lower IBU. So.
And this.
It'll be right up your alley.
Do you have the honeybee?
I do.
Okay.
If you don't like hops.
No, this is very smooth.
Which, I mean, Sean.
This is a perfect summer beer.
Sean,
is what
it
this
would
is.
Explain why your beard isn't as thick as mine. You know, if you're cutting back
well,
on the IBUs,
one of the many reasons that my beard isn't as thick as yours. Mm. Yeah, I mean that's just a nice,
refreshing,
smooth, clean. Yeah, like
there
I said,
go. Clean,
perfect summer type.
Right after
beer,
you get
I
done mowing the lawn.
Yep, that's right. And the fact that it says honeybee, I think, kind of says it all. You got a little bit of a sweetness in there to go along with. Everything else that you described.
You were mentally ready then for that one.
I was.
Good to go.
Now, I think the last one we have the same is the gingerbread brown.
It is, yeah.
Correct?
That's the other one.
Okay.
So this is a 7.1%, so a little bit higher than the honeybee.
Okay.
And the starlight. This is a brown ale, 25 IBUs, so close to right around what we had for the stout, but still at least in hop land.
Okay.
Or bitterness land, very low.
Okay.
Most IPAs or double IPAs are going to probably be around 100, and we're at 25 right now.
All right. So this is the
gingerbread-inspired brown ale with dark brown sugar, molasses, spices, and lactose. I like lactose in my beers.
You can definitely taste the gingerbread in there when you taste it. And again, it's nice and smooth. You know, there's a little bit of hop in there, but it's not overboard with the hop, and you get the gingerbread and kind of a light hop edge to it.
This is a good winter Christmassy beer.
I agree with that.
I can dig it.
I agree with that completely.
I think this one is going to be somewhat similar to my last one, which is the Spiced Yamber, 6.6
okay.
ABV. This is a seasonal amber because we have roasted sweet potatoes and a subtle touch of cinnamon, nutmeg, ginger, clove, and vanilla.
Yeah. This kind of sounds like an Oktoberfest-y kind of beer. Would you agree with that?
More, a little more.
I'm not tasting this one. This is
more,
only you. This is where
there's more spice than the gingerbread brown.
Okay.
But I like it a lot.
And for that matter, the gingerbread brown would be kind of a good October fest, you know, kind of into November, that kind of beer when the seasons start changing.
Yeah, those two, the gingerbread brown and the spiced amber, both make me think of fall.
Okay. So now you had the yamber.
What's your last one?
Do I have the last beer here?
Yes.
Then? So I have the Conestoga Cream Ale.
Okay, this is 5%. This has 11 international bitter units. The lowest so far today.
Is it?
This is an easy drinking ale, perfect for those looking for a beer that goes with everything.
All right. Yeah, just not quite, you know, it actually to me has a little bit more bite, but very smooth as well as you would expect from a cream ale. A little more bite than that honeybee that we were talking about before, but still fairly light. And refreshing, and I think that as we get into spring, this would be the
you like that one?
Yeah, the Conestoga Cream Ale would be a nice spring-type beer when things lighten up a little bit. You know, like it looks outside right now, some sunshine, but once that snow is melting, boom, perfect. In the meantime, I don't think you can go wrong with Starlight Stout right now.
There we go.
What do you think?
Starlight Stout? Well, if I had to drink these in order during the day, I'd probably have the Starlight Stout
I would
breakfast.
Agree. Okay.
And then I'd have the honeybee for lunch. And then I'd probably have a little gingerbread brown for dinner and the spiced amber for a nightcap.
Yeah, I think that I would agree with that.
If I were to drink all four of these beers throughout the day, that's how I would do it.
I might just finish off my nightcap with that Conestoga cream ale. So,
oh, okay.
All right. All right, we've got about a minute left. We want to make sure and thank Kevin, Jasmine, and Melissa for taking care of us, Christian Carlson as well, Bob Henning for helping us out here today. We've had a great time at Studebaker Brewing Company. Stop on by. They've got 8 different beers on tap right now. We only sampled, what,
5.
This is going to challenge our math. 5, thank you. 5, because we had the same. But they have 8 different beers on tap. They've also got Gimme Stitches, which is a wheat beer, Champion IPA, and Avanti Amber Red Ale as well. So we want to thank them for having us out. Studebaker Brewing Company, stop on by anytime. And also, of course, our presenting sponsor. Many thanks to them. Bud Light Seltzer, light and refreshing with 4 fruit flavors, just 100 calories, 2 grams of carbs, and less than a gram of sugar. It is Bud Light Seltzer in mango, strawberry, lemon, lime, and black cherry. Thanks to our engineer, Jesse Hollis, back at the studio today. We'll get some of that XFL talk next week since we didn't get to it today. I mean, priorities, right?
That's right.
Had to get the beer. All right, 96.1 WSBT South Bend.